Well, hello and welcome to another edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on a rather dreary-looking Monday morning out there. It may not be a lot of fun out there, but we're going to have a lot of fun in here as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. It's the holiday season. I know people listening have many different beliefs and all of that, but happy holidays to you, no matter what your belief is. Glad to have you with us. People at the station are celebrating already. It's practically a big party out here, but glad to have you with us, at least on the air as well. We're going to have fun on the show today. All of the holiday shows that have opened have opened, so I don't have any holiday shows to do today, so I'm having friends over, and we're talking about things that we're interested in. And one of my friends, Mr. Joe Vaughn, is with us. He is an author. He is a former newsman. He is a historian. He has numerous credits here. Former newsman. He's past president of the Native Sons and Daughters, past president of the Kansas Associated Press Broadcasters Association, past historian and past treasurer and of the Wyandotte County Historical Society, currently the honorary chairman of the Wyandotte County United Way. He was a newsman, an announcer, a journalist with KCMO Radio, an anchor there as well. Also made appearances with WREN. That's a whole news. I don't know if we'll get to that. But
that's a long time ago.
With KCKN and with 61 Country as well. And currently an elected official. He is the vice chairman of Water District Number 1 in Johnson County. Am I right about that?
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, what do you do at the water?
I always tell folks, we have the one product that you can feel free to drink and drive, but if you do it enough, you'll have to circle a convenience store.
That's right. Or find one. So you're a busy man.
I am. I am writing and authoring and producing products for clients, and with Water District Number 1, which serves three northeast Kansas counties, 500,000 customers in Johnson, Wyandotte, and Miami counties. A lot of people don't know Water 1 covers that huge 271 square mile territory.
Yeah, we waste a lot of water, don't we?
We do. And folks out west, I don't want to turn this into a water show. People might think it's just a big drip. But we know the underground water table west of Salina is drying up. But in the Kansas City area here in northeast Kansas and northwest Missouri, we're very blessed to be on the Kansas and Missouri rivers. And a lot of people don't realize the Missouri River is actually bigger than the Mississippi.
Oh, wow.
So Kansas City, we are well supplied with water for the indefinite future.
Yeah.
There are lots of folks who are not, and we don't want to forget them.
Oh, yeah. I remember in my trip to the Middle East last spring, water was was a scarce property. I mean, you were encouraged not to leave the faucet running.
It's liquid gold.
Yes.
In some parts of the world.
Yeah. Well, enough about that. You're here. You're a historian as well as a former broadcaster. You've had an interest in history, I guess, ever since you were a wee lad.
Well, I was in broadcasting for 22 years, and like times change in everything, most of the radio stations where I worked, either the format's been changed, the call letters, or the frequency, or all three.
Well, you've been on this station now. I don't know what to think.
Well, this station, I'm sure, is here in perpetuity.
Well, we hope so. But you have a great background in history, and you've written several books now. We're going to talk about your current one, but you have some past ones as well.
I wrote a history of KCKN Radio, which is now on FM KFKF 94.1. And the AM is Spanish language KDTD at 1340. And its history, in summary form, was it went on the air in 1925, was one of the first five radio stations in Kansas City. I think there are 37 now here in the metro market. And the call letters come from the Kansas City Kansan newspaper, KCKN, Kansas City Kansan.
Uh-huh.
And it was owned by the newspaper, like WDAF was originally owned by the Kansas City Star. In earlier eras, newspapers started the radio stations to extend their advertising vehicles. And in fact, the Star was sued in 1957 when they said you couldn't buy on the newspaper or the radio station or the TV station without buying the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, that got into antitrust issues.
Yes. But, yeah.
So that was advertising was the reason radio was invented. Now you know the truth of that's why it exists.
That's probably true.
It's a marketing tool.
Yeah. And worked quite well.
It has worked quite well. And amazingly, it is still very viable in spite of all the technology and television and digital TV and satellite radio. It's still a very has a huge audience.
Oh, sure. To digress just slightly back to KCKN. Did you work there during the time that Danny Kaye's company owned KCKN?
Yes, Kaye Smith of Spokane, Washington. That was actor Danny Kaye who owned the radio station. And I might also add, although there's probably nobody alive today, the station was put on the air by U.S. Senator Arthur Capper, C-A-P-P-E-R. And in the 20s and 30s, he would have been the equivalent of a Bob Dole. So with Danny Kaye and Bob Dole, Senator Capper owning that station, and then the newspaper owning it, it probably one of the reasons it was successful was it had solid ownership and good management. And that's the key to a commercial radio station.
One of the disc jockeys, former disc jockeys there, who actually worked on the FM side. He said his shift at the time was midnight to, say, 4 or 5 in the morning on KCKN. I believe it was FM, but it was a country format at the time. And he said he noticed the janitor one night wasn't the usual janitor. He said he had to look at him for a while, and then finally he realized, that's Mr. K wandering around there.
Well, he always did that, and there are some other people who are very successful in business who, in fact, there's a television show on Sunday nights, and I believe last night it was the Pittsburgh mayor went out on a trash truck to be sure the sanitary disposal workers were doing their jobs. Danny would always come to town and not tell anybody he was in town, and he'd have a key to the station, and of course he'd be listening to the station to make sure the sound was what he wanted and everything, and then he'd walk in either in incognito or at midnight like that when the people on duty wouldn't recognize him. But for those who remember Danny Kaye, the actor and comedian, once you recognized him, he had a very distinctive appearance. But if somebody came in a radio station at 1 a.m. in the morning, or even the CVS or the Walgreens, you probably would be not paying much attention to who was out at that time of night, but that's the way he did it.
Yeah.
That may be the reason that station had very, very successful years under his operation.
Yeah. Well, we should start talking about your current book.
Well, let's do, and we'll go from Danny Kaye to Thomas Johnson.
Thomas Johnson's story and the history of Fairway, Kansas. Now, people are always surprised when I mention to them, you know, Johnson County is not named after either of the presidents named Johnson. It's named after Dr. Thomas Johnson.
That's correct. And he is a very interesting figure who is becoming more interesting the more we know about him and the more we historians dig through the past and find new information. In 1830... That's a long time ago, Mike.
Yes, before my time.
President Andrew Jackson signed the Indian Removal Act. It was passed by Congress, and it was the Indian Removal Act of 1830, to be specific. And it called for all Indians. And by the way, I'm a contemporary person. I use the word Indian in the book, and I use it here because in 1830, they didn't know what a Native American. That's a...
Sure.
Post-1985 term, so I hope our folks listening will understand that they were Indians in 1830. Excuse me. And that act was to, as the country developed to the west, to move the Indians west of the Mississippi. The Methodist Church was the largest denomination west of the Mississippi at that time. Reverend Johnson was in southeast Missouri, and the Methodist Church called him to the Kansas Territory. Missouri entered as a slave state in 1821. Kansas entered as a free state in 1861. So in 1830, 9 years after Missouri statehood, Johnson was called to implement that act for the federal government. And when he got here, he first set up shop in the Turner area of Kansas City, Kansas, around 55th and Metropolitan. And he went there because Moses Grinder had Grinder House, which is an historic site. People can go see it, 78th and K32 Highway. He had been hired by the U.S. Army to run the ferry crossing between Fort Leavenworth, connecting Fort Scott. And if you're familiar in your mind's eye, Fort Scott is about 125 miles southeast of Fort Leavenworth. And Reverend Johnson thought that the trails coming out of the Queen City of the Trails, Independence, Missouri, Santa Fe, California, and Oregon, would follow the Kansas River and come through Turner. And Turner never incorporated. It's now a neighborhood in Kansas City, Kansas, like Rosedale or in Independence, Englewood, and in Stanley and Stillwell and Johnson County. People know some of those burgs that never incorporated. They also never go away. And he realized, though, that later, by 1839, that the trails were going to come south, and largely because they wanted to follow water, and there were Turkey Creek and some of the streams folks are familiar with when they go along I-35 were in that area. And so in 1839, the mission was put where it remains today, at 53rd and Mission Road in Fairway, Kansas. Originally, it had 2,200 acres and 16 buildings. Three of those buildings survive, and Johnson operated the mission for a total of 32 years, from 1830 to 1862, because after Kansas statehood, Kansas then had a government, and it was no longer needed because state government would then take over the duties and responsibility of administration. But in that 32-year period, and this is what the book is about, Johnson became a very powerful man and a very significant figure in the vacuum of anyone else being there. There was no government. There were no city, county, state. There was no sheriff's office. Couldn't call the Kansas Highway Patrol. And as a minister, ministers always, and to this day, of course, have a special position in a community, much like a mayor, a police officer, or a firefighter, or a judge, or whatever. And so he was the big dog in the territory, so to speak, for lack of anyone else being there. And therefore, he ended up with the territorial legislature from 1854 and 1855 meeting there. It moved from Pomona, Kansas, and then after 1855, it was in Lecompton, which a lot of people, that became where the museum is for the Constitution Hall and everything just northeast of Topeka. But in that 1854 and 1855 period, territorial governor Reedwer, his office was there, and the bogus legislature met. And the reason it was called the bogus legislature, and Mr. Kobach in Topeka would really, this he'd have a field day with his bogus legislature. They had no idea where those folks came from, who they represented, what their idea was, and if they were who they said they were personally. And so Reverend Johnson, and in retrospect, justly labeled it the bogus legislature, because we have no idea who you are, who you represent, or what we're going to do here with you. And that's one of the reasons to keep the mission clear as a school for students, what the Methodist Church and the federal government wanted. That's how, after 2 years, it ended up in Lecompton, Kansas.
Yeah. Well, the mission educated Native American children, I guess.
Correct.
And it was, as you said, it was much bigger than it is now, but you can visit it there. It's on Mission Road, just north of Shawnee Mission Parkway. That's the reason they have Shawnee and Mission. And,
yes.
Although there is no city of Shawnee Mission. There's a Shawnee and there's a Mission.
Well, you know, that leads into a whole lot of information that really is about all of Johnson County, because as time passed, Johnson County quickly became a developing suburb of the two Kansas cities. And after World War II, and a lot of people listening today have been around and seen, witnessed that growth, when, you know, the strip on Johnson Drive and Mission was, you were pretty far south then.
Yeah.
And if you were at 75th and Metcalf, that was way out there. And then some will remember the French Market at 95th and Metcalf when that was out in the sticks. Well, as they began to organize the area and government began dividing up geographical areas and jurisdictions after the 1861 statehood, Johnson County was named after Reverend Johnson. He allegedly didn't want it, but there again, as I mentioned earlier, he was the big dude on the block, so they thought, well, why not go ahead and name it after Reverend Johnson? So now all you Johnson Countyans, you know that Johnson County was named after Reverend Thomas Johnson, who came here in 1830 to run the Shawnee Indian Mission. So in dividing up the areas, the sub-governments of counties are townships. They came along before the cities. So Mission and Shawnee Township were in northeast Johnson County. And as events moved forward, a lot of the little cities began developing there, like Prairie Village, Roland Park, Mission, Mission Woods, Mission Hills, Westwood, Westwood Hills, Mission Woods, and I'm probably leaving somebody out. But when it came time to form a post office in 1958, they couldn't agree on who are we going to name this after. So the U.S. Postal Service said, well, why don't we name it after the townships? So it became the Shawnee Mission Post Office. That's when the name Shawnee Mission Post Office began to take on a regional meaning in addition to just having been the campus where the Indian children were brought. Up until about 1958, the mail came through the Kansas City, Kansas post office for folks in those little cities, and they purchased their water from Kansas City, Missouri, and had county fire protection and police protection from the Johnson County Sheriff. And eventually, as anyone knows, everyone knows today, you, if nothing else, have probably been caught in a speed trap in any one of those cities. It's a reality. They're there.
Yeah.
And the name continued to extend out. In 1962, the Shawnee Mission School District was formed, and there again, it covers the area all the way out to 435 on the south, where Blue Valley becomes a school district. Some of you listening, I'm sure, are identifying geographically or in your mind's eye or sitting in your office or your living room with what I'm talking about. Then the Shawnee Mission District goes west of the I-435, which is over in the Shawnee-Lenexa area. Then it goes north to the Wyandotte County line and east to the Missouri line. And they called the district the Shawnee Mission School District. So then that continued to be agreeable. It was easy to say. So Shawnee Mission Hospital came along. And there are any number of things that continue to be named Shawnee Mission. So if you've never heard the story or you ever wondered, why is everything in Johnson County called Shawnee Mission? Well, it all comes from that 1830 mission that Johnson formed in what is now Fairway, Kansas. And it is one of only two postal districts. This is an amusing curiosity I found out. One of only two postal districts in the United States that is not identified with an incorporated city. And the other one is in suburban Washington, D.C. So there is no, you were right when you said there is no city of Shawnee Mission.
No,
and that
not.
Frustrates a lot of people. I just can't figure that
for
out.
For a time, people's addresses over there were listed as Shawnee Mission, Kansas. And right. I would say to them, well, she actually lives in Prairie Village. And they would say, but it says Shawnee Mission here. Yeah. And they'll want to argue about it, but there is no Shawnee Mission.
Right. And there is a Mission, Kansas and a Shawnee, Kansas, but they're separate incorporated entities. And they just chose the name. And, of course, there's Mission Hills and Mission Woods. And apparently the word mission was very agreeable to a lot of folks. But it's a name that got extended out for probably about half of the geographical area of the county it relates to.
Yeah. Well, just think of all the hundreds of thousands, I'm going to say hundreds of thousands, of people that drive by that little cemetery on Shawnee Mission Parkway near Mission.
Right.
Rarely do you see it unless you make it a point to look for it.
Correct. And that's probably by virtue of being on Shawnee Mission Parkway. That's the most visible aspect of the mission because it is on that heavily traveled freeway. Shawnee Mission Parkway is a story in itself. about 1987, the Johnson County Commissioners, when Johnson County really started growing west into Merriam and Shawnee all the way to the Douglas County line over near DeSoto, they found that they had Rock Creek Parkway, and they had Johnson Drive, and they had 63rd Street, and they had K-10. And it was very confusing because nobody knew which city they were in or what street they were on.
It's true.
Another example of why the uniformity became something very useful in organizing the county, even as late as the last 25 years. So that's how Shawnee Mission Parkway, which runs from State Line near Pembroke Hill all the way to K-7 out in Shawnee DeSoto, got its name. And it's the major east-west thoroughfare in northern Johnson County.
Yeah, where'd you get all the pictures? The book is just loaded with pictures, and some of them are of a very historical nature.
Well, thank you. A picture, they often say, is worth 1,000 words. So each picture saved me one heck of a lot of writing and research.
Yeah.
But the Johnson County Historical Society, or the Johnson County Museum, and the City of Fairway were very generous in providing those to me with credit, of course, attribution in the book. But there are some interesting things in addition to the mission. The Reinhardt Estate was the huge farmhouse nearest there that still survives. There's a picture of it in the book, and you can go by and you can drive by it. It's beautiful. There's lots of history in Johnson County. People think of all of the history being in the two Kansas cities and Independence by virtue of them being the oldest incorporated cities in the area. But at least since 1830, we know there has been a lot of interesting things happening in Johnson County and around Fairway.
Yeah, my guest is Joe Vaughn, he's a veteran broadcaster, historian, actually honorary chairman now of the Wyandotte County United Way campaign. But he has written, your third book, right? Thomas Johnson and the Story and the History of Fairway, Kansas, which includes the Shawnee Indian Mission we've right. been talking about. And your first book was about KCKN. Then you wrote another one about
Kansas City, Kansas.
That's right. Yeah, and yes. The settlement on the river of of African Americans.
Well, African Americans, and of course, before the African Americans were here, Lewis and Clark came through after the Louisiana Purchase in 1803, and there's a big marker over there on Caw Point where the Caw empties into the Missouri River. That would be just east of downtown Kansas City, Kansas. And they stopped there on both going up in 1803 and coming back in 1805. They camped at the same point and noted the convergence of the two rivers and what a beautiful site that would be developed. And but our listeners need to remember when they were there, this was 30 years before Johnson came to Kansas territory.
Sure.
There were no roads. There were no gravel highways. They didn't have weed eaters either. They got through there with whips and saws, and they had a dog, a Sacagawea was the Indian who connected with the indigenous people because they only spoke English. And the dog chased off many coyotes and wildcats. And next time you think about any of the toughest neighborhoods you may think of today in contemporary society, just think of the natural challenges those people faced in terms of they didn't know over the next bend whether it was going to drop off 150 feet down a limestone wall like sure. we have around here, sure. or whether it was going to be trees that had grown to a foot apart. And the challenge of Lewis and Clark is a fascinating story in itself. I do want to tell you one of the things that amuses a lot of people is the very city that yeah. Shawnee Mission is in is Fairway. And why isn't it named like all the other cities, Mission, Shawnee?
Yeah,
Mission,
why not?
Because when the J.C. Nichols Company came around in 100 years later in the 1930s and divided it up for a subdivision, the guys in the architect's office, they were sitting there and they suddenly realized there were two country clubs on the south and a public golf course to the northwest, and the original Smiley's was where the Channel 5 studios are. So some wag in the office probably said, well, let's call this subdivision Fairway. But that's one of the most puzzling curiosities to a lot of people is, why is this city called Fairway, Kansas? And if you don't know a golfer, it's if you're not a golfer, it's even more mysterious. But anybody wanting this book can go to Rainy Day Books in Fairway. About everybody knows Vivian Jennings. She's a wonderful lady, and that business is historic in its own right. But the book is available, Thomas Johnson's Story and the History of Fairway, Kansas, at Rainy Day Books in Fairway.
Is it going to also be eventually on Amazon.com?
It will be. We kind of rolled out late here for Christmas, sure, but we're catching up.
Yeah. Well, Christmas season just comes upon us, doesn't it?
It does. It has it kind of like cat's feet.
Are all of your books available at Rainy Day?
Or
she can order them?
Yes. Yeah. And that's why she's so successful, is if you want it, she gets it.
Yeah. You're also, as I mentioned, the chairman of the Wyandotte County United Way. That's kicking off. And
a lot of people are dependent on folks donating, particularly at this time of the year. The United Way is a age-old organization that helps those who are less fortunate, and I happen to believe in that way of charitable giving. And so anybody who wants to support a charity, the Wyandotte County United Way is around, and of course the Salvation Army is wonderful.
They are. Well, thanks for being with us and telling us about your third book. Do you have a fourth one on?
It's on the way. Thank you for letting me in the door, Mike.
That's right. Well, we'll be hearing about these in the future. Next time we're at lunch, you'll have to fill me in.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Joe Vaughn, author, historian, former newsman, several radio stations here in the area. You might remember him the most from 61 Country or KCMO Radio.
Right.
Recognize that
with
voice.
With Mike Murphy.
That's right. And he has written his latest book, Thomas Johnson and the Story and the History of Fairway, Kansas. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks so much. We're going to take a break, just briefly. Then when we return, we have more to tell you about another publication here in the area. We'll cover that when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. After 13 years, Peter Jackson's six-film adaptation of J.R.R. Tolkien's Middle-earth saga finally reaches its rousing 3D finale. The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, displays all of the weaknesses of the previous films, particularly the narrative padding and a voluminous lineup of characters that's nearly impossible to keep track of. But it also features the series' strengths, notably the top-drawer eye candy and perpetual action that's redefined the term big-screen spectacle. As a whole, Jackson's epic series is an imposing cinematic achievement. Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb is the third in the comic fantasy series, and it's yet another visual treat. Ben Stiller and his reanimated exhibit items traveled to the British Museum this time out and managed to get in plenty of trouble. Ben Kingsley, Rebel Wilson, and Downton Abbey's Dan Stevens join in the mayhem this time out. Clever, imaginative, and beautifully produced, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb is a likable family flick that should appeal to fans of the previous films. It may even get kids to want to visit an actual museum. Oscar-winning actress Reese Witherspoon stars in Wild, the adaptation of Cheryl Strayed's best-selling memoir. After experiencing a divorce, the death of her mother, and a string of one-night stands, the troubled Strayed sought an emotional catharsis by taking an excruciating 1,100-mile hike along the Pacific Crest Trail. Although dangerous and challenging, the trek proved to be an experience of self-discovery and growth. While well-acted and lovingly filmed, Wild simply isn't as illuminating as it should have been. What was apparently riveting on the page achieves only modest success on the big screen. Also opening this week, Annie is a contemporary reworking of the classic Broadway musical about Little Orphan Annie. Covongene Wallace, Jamie Foxx, and Cameron Diaz star. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI FM. Freeze Frame!
If your unemployment benefits have been denied in the last 30 days, you may be eligible for free legal assistance from attorneys and law students through the UMKC School of Law Unemployment Benefits Clinic. To find out if you are eligible for these free legal services, your unemployment benefits must have been denied in the last 30 days. Contact the clinic today and talk to an attorney about your case free of charge. Call 816-235-5129. Again, call 816-235-5129.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hoag, your host. It's not any less dreary out there, but I hope you're warm, cozy, and comfortable inside wherever you are. Wasn't that interesting about the history of Johnson County? A lot of people put down Johnson County, but it has a history just as Jackson County does, just as many of the communities around the area do. Like, for instance, Raytown, Missouri has a history as well. Diane Krizek is with us. I was worried about pronouncing her name. She is the owner and publisher of the still fairly new Raytown Brooking Eagle. It started last year. It's kind of a it's kind of an arts and info magazine talking about various things going on around the area. Welcome to the show, Diane. Glad to have you here.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Mike. Yeah.
A publisher just within the first year or so?
Yes, the first issue came out October 4th, 2013. And we're a newspaper, however, you know, we're making sure our arts community gets some publicity that they've been crying for years.
Yeah, well, don't hear a whole lot of things about arts, especially in the Raytown area. Yeah, I know every summer I have the Raytown Arts Council on the program, and that's one of the things you cover is the activities of the Raytown Arts Council.
Yes, yes, and I used to be, I was the former president of the Friends of Raytown Park, so I was very determined to get arts in the park. And so in 2012, we had our very first Raytown Arts and Music Festival. At that time, well, next door to me, my business neighbor, he's a founder of the Kansas City Blues Society, wrenches on cars during the day, and he's a blues man at night and plays the casinos and all this. So we get him on the committee, and he put together for our first year, Casey Kelsey, Linda Shell, the blues thing. And we had Monarchs, and anyway, it was a nice kickoff. Second year, we didn't gain any momentum because that was the year even the American Royal Parade was rained out. So, last year, we were able to get Brewer and Shipley as our headliner.
Now, Brewer is from Raytown, correct?
Michael, he's not from, but he did attend Raytown High School for several years. Yes. So, yes, a lot of folks remember the family, and he told stories at the festival about somebody running down the family's mailbox.
He once did a benefit for our station, KKFI. And part of the proceeds from the show went to KKFI. And I remember hearing the story that they actually recorded their hit, One Toke Over the Line, as an Independence, in the Caves. There was a music studio in the Caves down there. But that's where they recorded One Toke Over the Line. Mm-hmm. I'm going to any explanation of what the song means, but you kind of know by listening.
Yes, they talk like it was very innocent, actually, but even though the Nixon administration was really upset by it, but Lawrence Welk had him anyway in 1971. It didn't bother him one bit.
Oh, no. Wouldn't bother Larry. Well, I shouldn't call him Larry. but he is going to be appearing then at, I didn't have the date. The Arts and Music Festival?
We secured them again for this year, August 29th, 2015. So we're really excited about that.
They'll be playing all their hits, I guess.
Yeah, and more. They are releasing some new CDs and so.
What got you interested in covering the art scene?
Well, I am a season ticket holder and a supporter of the Kansas City Symphony, the Lyric Opera, Friends of Chamber Music and all. But the paper actually started when with the fiasco over the green space that was being rezoned for a Walmart neighborhood market, and some of us folks did not believe that should be a big box store, should be in a downtown. Mm-hmm. Put it over here, not in the downtown. But the issues were not being, there was nobody talking about the issues. Like, this is, you know, both sides of the situation. And so, and then, of course, being involved in the various organizations I've been in, from the DAR to the Friends of Raytown Parks to the Arts Council and all, I realize everybody's crying for publicity. So with my 30-plus years of IT, I'm thinking, yeah, and I have a BA in communication/journalism, plus all my computer programming, I thought we can get publicity. So I started the paper to get the news out to Raytown. And plus, we have every article is blogged and syndicated to Facebook and Twitter and Tumblr, and you guessed it. So there's publicity.
It's important to cover all those things nowadays. You actually do print.
Yes,
editions
we print.
Of the paper as
well. Oh, you bet. We print. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And where can people come across these?
We've got papers dropped at all the major grocery stores, salons, barbershops, different spots where we see people are picking up, you know. Raytown has never really had a paper that people buy. But I'm fixing to change that, I hope, in the next year or so. When I make it so irresistible, they'll have to, they're willing to pay.
Well, sure.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. And it's also online, at least for now.
It is. It's online, and it's printed by the pre-press at the Examiner in Independence.
Yeah. We're speaking with Diane Krizak, and she is the owner publisher of the Raytown Brooking Eagle. It started in October of 2013 and is printing today. They cover more than just the arts things in Raytown. We're going to cover some of the arts things as well. There's some historic homes in Raytown. There's an arts and music festival we talked about. I'm trying to remember back. Roundup days in Raytown?
That kind of has fallen by the wayside.
Oh, no.
Yes, it has.
It's
yes.
Because I attended.
And it became the Summerfest, and then the chamber has opted not to do it any longer for several reasons. They needed to change their way, you know. It just was the attendance wasn't, they made good money, but the vendors weren't getting the traffic. So they're rethinking their plan. And, but in the meantime, they've got the senior celebration that they did, and it was highly successful given there's a big senior community in town. They had a DJ, they had dancing, and, you know, it was a really fun, a catered dinner, and everybody had a ball. I would love to see it, the whole community, that it opened up to all ages. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, that's... So right now, yes, Raytown has a community band. The Raytown Arts Council, you see, also manages the community band. Most of the time they're playing at retirement communities as well. They do, but they also do the patriotic tribute and thank you to veterans and to celebrate and honor veterans in November. They did last night, they did a Christmas gig at the St. Matthew's Episcopal. That started out as a thank you concert because that's where the orchestra or the band practices every Thursday night.
Uh-huh.
In fact, I think it's the priest there is a drummer in the band.
Not unusual.
Yeah.
Some of the disc jockeys, well, we're not supposed to emphasize this, some of the disc jockeys here at the station are members of bands.
Mm-hmm.
And we know a lot about that here
yes.
at the radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Arts Council puts on a summer musical every summer, and we usually have them on as a guest. And I will ask them, you know, what other activities does the Raytown Arts Council get involved with? And, I think we have an art show every once in a while.
There's a spring art show.
But they don't
yes.
really cover it. I'll bet you can cover it for us.
Yeah, there is a spring art show. They do a big, as I said, they do a big thing for the retirement community. I tell you, they were on the top of their game playing jazz. They love their jazz and boogie. I mean, at the Christmas concert, they're playing 30s and 40s big band songs, like Big Band Bash, Baby It's Cold Outside, and Jazzy Christmas, and they love that. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, we need to get these people out into the community, you know, and not just the retirement community. But, like I said, the summer musical, that's been going on since 98, and this year it's Brigadoon.
Aha.
Brigadoon. The performances will be in July. It's always usually July, so July 17th through 18th. And as I'm one of my CPA friend and opera lover and piccolo player is so delighted to hear about Brigadoon. She adores the music, and she can't wait to join the pit orchestra.
I know last year, it's usually at Raytown High School's auditorium.
Yes, that's
right. But last summer, I know they moved it over to Raytown
that
South.
That was because of renovations that were going on in Ray High. Ray High has the latest theatrical equipment and everything. You can, they've got... But they had to move to Ray South. But
well, they always do a good show, but they just have that one big production, I guess, a year.
That's right.
These other smaller events throughout the year as well. Speaking with Diane Krizak, the owner-publisher of the Raytown Brooking Eagle, she covers the art scene, other information around town. Ray, somebody told me the story once of why it's called Raytown, named after someone named Ray. Do you happen to know
Ray
that story?
Ray the blacksmith.
Oh, let's hear that.
Well, I don't know a lot. I mean, I'm not a member of the Historical Society, and I need to be, but because I'm very much interested. You know, Raytown, people don't realize that all three trails went through Raytown, Santa Fe, Oregon, and the California.
Were they all one trail at that point?
They kind of, some at times, yeah, they meandered, yeah, and the Historical Society could talk more about that. But National Parks has been... there's been a big project to get all these trails marked with these big markers.
Oh, they should be.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, yes. And it's going all the way to Santa Fe, to Oregon, and, you know, and different cities are being, and they're granting the funds to put up these markers. So I'm very excited about what that can do for Raytown, bringing tourism and stuff, because it's bringing, the trails go right into downtown, past the horse barn, go to the Reistermani, the 1844, wood frame home that still stands in Raytown, and on to Cave Springs Park. And that was a place where settlers actually had enough ground that they could actually stay overnight with their cattle. And so that was another part of the trails getting them through. So Raytown has some neat history, but Ray was the blacksmith helping them along. And there are one of the historians shared with me that, they look in the journals. They look and one of the stories was, oh, it was too expensive to stay in Independence, so we're going down to where Ray is, And of course, they knew where they could go to help. Fix their wagon wheels and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
See, we don't know the history of some of these things, and
no.
We need to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is your mission to cover not just the art scene, but other
other newspapers? But we do have, it's a very eclectic community, and there's a lot of talented folks in Raytown doing gigs all over the city. We have an up-and-coming, we have a Raytown Artists Association. They do an invitational art show that attracts artists from the region. And then of that group, there's a new up-and-coming sculptor we're excited about. Mark Moore is creating sculptures cut from 14-gauge sheets of copper, 10-gauge sheets of brass, and 301 stainless to create these beautiful sculptures. He loves mixing metals and semi-precious. They're fabulous. I mean, you can go to our website. But he is donating one of his pieces to the upcoming Kansas City Artist Coalition's annual benefit, the art auction that's taking place February 21st. So he's donating a piece there so you can see it. But they're just fabulous. I just can't describe them. They're dragonflies and scorpions and eagles, and they're just mirror polished. It's a fabulous. He's also going to be featured at the 54th annual Jim Mineral and Jewelry Show at KCI Expo. He's been a part of that, but his sculptures are really starting to gain recognition.
Working with metal like that would be difficult. You would have to heat it up and then maneuver it at once it reaches a certain temperature, which I'm not sure.
He is cutting these pieces out of these sheets and assembling them into this art. And it's, like I said, I took pictures just for the way, because it's hard for anybody to visualize what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Here, I'll show you a picture here.
Okay. I'll describe it, folks, as best I can. But yes, he is. He's maneuvering it there. And he does use a torch. Yeah, and this picture is on the website, you say?
Yes.
RaytownEagle.com.
Google search for Mark Moore, and then you can see some of his fabulous sculptures. See at the bottom there?
Uh-huh.
Dragonflies.
Oh, they are dragonflies. Yeah.
And these things are about, 3 feet. He's got small. He's got eagles. He's got, they're remarkable and very unique.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that is an eagle right there. And again, these pictures. RaytownEagle.com. You can look up some of these pictures. Sorry, the audience can't see. They can only hear me. I try to paint as good a word picture as I can.
Uh-huh.
But it talks about Mark had a talk in November. I guess he will have other talks in the future. They can buy his things, or they can at them at some of the shows he's having.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So we're very excited that he's come out of Raytown. And we have musicians, as I say, that come out of
What's the oldest building in Raytown? Do you know?
Well, probably that 1844 Rice Tremonti. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, old buildings, festivals, things of that. Nature. Raytown was made famous within the last 10 years or so. Carol Burnett show, Mama's Family, is named Raytown. And yeah, it is named after Raytown. No question about that.
Well, I have to tell you that the natives, the born and raised of Raytown, says that's an urban legend about Carol Burnett. They say, in fact, the former mayor, Sue Frank, who gave an award to Vicki Lawrence. Vicki said it was one of the producers who was born and raised in Raytown.
Oh,
that's
okay.
where it hails from.
I
could not find that to verify that story.
The story
have to do as an editor.
You might have to write Carol, I guess. The story I was told in the 60s, she would often appear at Starlight Theater. That was before, I guess she was on the Gary Moore show then, before her own show got really big. And she was leaving Swope Park, made a right instead of a left, and ended up on 63rd Street and ended up in Raytown, where she got a ticket. Wasn't very happy about that, and remembered the name of Raytown. And when they came across needing a name for Mama's Family, Vicki Lawrence is actually Mama, and Carol plays Mama's daughter. It's kind of unusual. But I was told that's one of the reasons it's Raytown in the story.
I'll be looking into that, and I'll let you know.
We're going to uncover this.
Yes, we should.
Yeah, you let me know.
Yeah, to rest.
Yeah, we may have to write Carol to find out about this. Wouldn't that be exciting, though?
Yes.
She might want to come on the show and talk about it. Publishing a different... You have a lot of things to work in there. I imagine people are always saying, well, could you work in an article about my thing? And what about my thing over here? It must be difficult to pick and choose what to put
in. I publish everybody's thing. I don't discriminate. Everybody's thing is important, whether it's the friendly club at Lady of Lourdes doing their dinner, and they'll have entertainment sometimes, could be dulcimers or whatever, and we put it all in, I think it's important. My philosophy is you guys are the newsmakers. You're the newsmakers. Your story is important, and it's a community paper. I'm not covering national news, and I'm not competing for that. We're still evolving. How much do I share in county and state politics, which are important? But I've pretty much kept it to a community paper. We've had some neat stories,
If people want to get in touch with you, I guess they can always go to RaytownEagle.com. Is there a way they can email you from there?
Yeah, editor@RaytownEagle.com.
What kinds of stories are you most looking for?
Well, with a Raytown connection, if possible, we had, I think it was a Department of Energy Office of Science actually contacted me one day. Did you know you have Raytown South high school students that have entered the competition to represent Missouri in the Science Bowl in Washington, D.C.?
Wow.
I mean, we do. Yeah, we are pulling them in. And then we had another, we had an alumnus that... He wrote his first kind of a science fiction kind of book for middle school age, and he hailed from Raytown South. So, you know, that's one nice thing about being on the web. We are being found, and then people are wanting to connect with us, you know. My farthest subscriber is in St. Louis and St. Charles area, believe it or else.
Probably a person who used to be from Raytown. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It was 10 years ago, maybe longer. They did a big facelift. I know that big intersection at 63rd Street and Blue Ridge Cutoff was redone entirely, made wider, signs and all of that. Was that part of a big strategic plan?
No, you're talking 63rd and
Blue Ridge. I believe it's called Cutoff there, isn't it?
There was a new bridge, and there has been some really neat pillars as you come into the community. The next biggest project, though, will be doing a streetscape that's going to be between Raytown Road and Blue Ridge. It will be narrowing the street, but it'll give it a really cool feel. You know, it's not a very nice sidewalk there. Uh-huh. And so this will be a broad start, very pedestrian friendly. And the Main Street Association has secured funding, a grant to pay for these cool bronzes that will commemorate different historical events in Raytown. They'll be embedded in the sidewalk and in strategic. And there will be, you know, darling street lamps, and it'll really beautify the area.
Yeah, I'm concerned whenever I drive over at that bridge, that older bridge, and I guess it's actually
the wood bridge, the old wood bridge.
Yes.
Yes, it did get renovated a few years back, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the one-way bridge.
Yeah, and it's very narrow, as I recall.
Yes, and by the way, you go down in the bottoms from there, and that's where the upcoming Crane Brewery will be. Have you heard about Michael Crane and his brews?
No.
Oh, no. He's been making all kinds of, winning all kinds of awards in the brewery scene. And he's hoping to open a brewery there in Raytown. He already has property there. He was a designer of furniture. And his story is that his client, biggest client, decided to go overseas to China. So he had been dabbling with making brew. They started out with a little Target kit, a kit from Target to make beer. And he's really into bacteria and all kinds of stuff. I went to his home to do the story, another story on RaytownEagle.com. But you can find Michael Crane, C-R-A-N-E, all over the web. He's all over. I tasted a Lambic Belgian style beer. It's pink. It was aged on raspberries. And I found it yummy. I'm really a wino more than a beero. But it was beautiful. It's called the sour beer, and they add lactobacillus to it. It looked like pink lemonade, so I was ready for the sour. It was, and then he had a beet beard I tried. But he's really going to add to the downtown Raytown scene when that opens next year.
Well, that will change it. I know it seemed to be fairly busy out there, and then the big church moved out of the area, and it's just a green space where the church moved out to 350 Highway.
That's right, First Baptist. And what's happened, well, they didn't realize the old church was full of asbestos, so there had to be funding to try to get that. Emmanuel Cleaver, our representative, was able to get some of the funding to get that removed. And then part of the deal is that it had to be had to go back to green space at least for a year.
Oh, sure.
So now we have some premium real estate there. And that was the issue over the Raytown neighborhood market. It needs to be multi-tenant, high density, maximize your property tax revenue by putting as much square footage as possible in that area.
Yeah, well, as you see, there's a lot of issues going on that Diane covers in her paper. She's also on the web, RaytownEagle.com. Check out the activities of the Raytown Arts Council. Now, they probably have their own website as well, but perhaps you can go from hers to theirs if you want. They have a big show coming up in the summer, Brigadoon, back at Raytown High School again. Various festivals throughout the year, this Arts and Music Festival, which will feature Brewer and Shipley. coming up in the spring or the summer for Brewer and Shipley?
August 29th.
Okay, late
and
in the
by
summer.
The way, this is free. You get to see. I mean, they were at Uptown November, was it November 2013? Mm-hmm. You'll get to see them, hear them for free.
Yeah.
At an Arts and Music Fest in the Park is free to the public.
That's right. Many historic homes, all that in Diane's paper, the Raytown Brooking Eagle, and it's Brooking because it's Brooking Township.
That's right, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But on the website, RaytownEagle.com, and they can also pick up the paper at various establishments. Just name a couple.
The Big Hy-Vee, Apple Markets, the Raytown Water Department, City Hall, the library, the Bowen Apartments, where we have a lot of high density of residents, Bowen Apartments, Temple Heights, and all that, and Cave Springs, and you know, we're everywhere. We at least 100 drops places to drop it off. The store, the old-fashioned store.
Sure.
Our neat old, we love it, butcher shop that still wraps everything in white butcher paper.
Sure.
And, so we have some neat community, neat businesses that really add character to Raytown.
Yeah,
we have probably the biggest collection of neon signs in one place. Funhouse Pizza renovated their sign this year. To commemorate their 50th.
50 years of Funhouse Pizza there on 350.
Yeah, they have a marvelous neon sign, all with those lights, and then a big starburst all lit up, and that got renovated. And
well, you can pick up Diane's paper, the Raytown Brooking Eagle, at the location she mentioned around Raytown. Also online at RaytownEagle.com. And if you have any information you want to send her away, go to RaytownEagle.com. Send her. It's editor@RaytownEagle.com.
That's right.
It's her email. And send her your information about arts and about other things as well. It sounds like she's on top of what's going on in Raytown.
That's a fun part, yeah. And because I have a story to share with you. See, do we have more time?
No, we only got about a minute.
Because we have George Michaud. He's our producer's corner. I found George in the pool hall. We have one of the only real pool halls in the region. There are 9 pool tables and 1 billiards table. George was down there. George is an old talent scout, a talent agency.
Yeah.
And he does a regular column for us. He was mentored by Stan Irwin, who made Judy Garland famous.
Sure.
So we've got his latest story was about Liberace, so you can read that in our paper as well.
RaytownEagle.com, or pick it up at one of the locations that Diane mentioned. I want to thank Diane Krisak, the owner and publisher of the Raytown Brooking Eagle. Again, RaytownEagle.com. Thank you so much for being with us. The Jazz Insider is next. He's got a lot of great things planned for you. Jazz from 1 to 3, the blues from 3 to 6, right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you next time.